Good morning, church. It is good to be together with you all, as always. Especially mindful of it as the numbers of COVID cases increase in our county, the blessing it is to be together. And thinking about those of our number even who are struggling with that, I hope that we will continue to be mindful of one another and the acts of grace that we can show in a difficult time. So we are trying our best to maintain in-person services, and we want to be able to do that. It's just going to take some work on our part and on the part of our community and our community as well. And so we continue to pray for that. We think it's really important that the saints meet together, and I am thankful for our eldership who are committed to finding a way for us to be together, and thankful for their perseverance in a difficult time. So here we are at Thanksgiving already. Thanksgiving, wow. And we're going to be celebrating Thanksgiving in sort of the midst of a worldwide pandemic. It's a situation that has cost the lives of over 100,000 people in our country alone. It has turned all of our lives completely upside down for the past several months, right? It has shut down businesses, schools, and churches, and forced us to come up with alternative solutions to meeting together in person. So people are working from home. We are ordering food out. We are having church. We're able to meet online, and schools are virtually teaching, and it has just been, who would have thought this? I mean, just a few months ago. As we speak right now, the unemployment rate for Americans is much better than it was a couple of months ago, but it's still roughly double what it was in February at the beginning of this whole thing. The Hispanic and Black population has been particularly hard hit, mostly because of the industries that they have been employed in, but their unemployment rates are still around 9% for Hispanic population and around 11% for the Black population. Nationwide, 11% unemployment for Black Americans. So how are we supposed to be thankful? I mean, what's there to be thankful for? That's what can be really tempting right now. And as I was kind of working through that this week, I thought, what am I thankful for? And I thought about a few things. You know, I'm thankful I've got a roof over my head and clothes on my back. I think I've got a wife who still loves me most days, and kids who will still live under my roof for now. And I'm thankful for the Forest Mill Church, and I'm thankful I have a vehicle that runs, and all these things I was thinking up. But what are we really thankful for? Well, I'm not an artist in the vaguest sense of the word. I'm still not an artist. But I have been told that part of the beauty of art, it's not just the colors and the shapes that are on the canvas, but part of the beauty is in the contrast. That's part of what makes art beautiful. Have you ever noticed that you often don't appreciate something until you don't have it? Like sleep, or water, or air. I mean, go without air for just a short while, then you will appreciate the next breath, right? And in fact, I've come to believe that the contrast is really important in developing attitudes of thanksgiving. That contrast is vital. College students who are coming home for the Thanksgiving break, they probably think their mom or their grandma's cooking is better than ever, because you've been living off of institutional food, right? And once, or fast food, or ramen noodles, or whatever it is you're scrounging by on, all of a sudden home cooking is particularly good. Even if it was a meal like you didn't particularly look forward to when you were living at home, just getting a home-cooked meal, it's pretty fantastic, right? So in a way, contrasts are important for us to develop this gratitude, this thankfulness for the world in which we live, because thanksgiving is born out of that contrast. Conversely, I also believe this explains why sometimes we struggle being thankful. That maybe we don't have the same contrasts in our lives. And I thought about a couple of different stories from Scripture to illustrate, but I'm going to focus in on a story from Luke chapter 7, beginning at verse 36. It's a familiar story about when Jesus is visiting the home of a well-known Pharisee. So this is the story from Luke chapter 7. One of the Pharisees asked Jesus to eat with him. So Jesus went into the Pharisee's house and sat at a table. Then a sinful woman in the town learned that Jesus was eating in the Pharisee's house. She brought an alabaster jar of perfume and stood behind Jesus at his feet, crying. She began to wash his feet with her tears, and she dried them with her hair, kissing them many times and rubbing them with perfume. When the Pharisee who asked Jesus to come to his house saw this, he thought to himself, if Jesus were a prophet, he would know this woman who's touching him is a sinner. Jesus said to the Pharisee, Simon, I have something to say to you. And Simon said, Teacher, tell me. Jesus said, two people owed money to the same banker. One owed 500 coins and the other owed 50. They had no money to pay what they owed. But the banker told both of them that they didn't have to pay him. Now, which person will love the banker more? Simon the Pharisee answered, I think it'd be the one who owed him the most money. And Jesus said to Simon, you are right. Good answer. Then Jesus turned toward the woman and said to Simon, do you see this woman? Which is I think it's a really funny question. This sinful woman who's in Simon's house. Do you see her? Have you noticed her? And Simon's like, oh my goodness, I noticed her when she got within 50 feet of this house, right? Simon, do you see this woman? When I came into your house, you gave me no water for my feet, but she washed my feet with her tears and dried them with her hair. You gave me no kiss of greeting, but she has been kissing my feet since I came in. You did not put oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. I tell you that her many sins are forgiven, so she showed great love. But the person who is forgiven only a little will love only a little. Then Jesus said to her, your sins are forgiven. Now in this story, both the story of Simon and Jesus and the sinful woman, and in the parable, we get a lesson in contrast, is what I'd like to say. First of all, we got the Pharisee, right? We know his name because he's prominent. His name is Simon. Jesus calls him Simon, so we know his name is Simon. Evidently, he is a well-respected man, probably well-to-do because he's having a banquet in which he gets to invite others. If you're really poor and have a small space or not enough food, you don't get to do those sorts of things. So he's got adequate space, he's got adequate food, and for him this is a sort of a display. And it seems like Simon is really concerned about appearances. Because when you put these verses together, you can kind of see that his motivation for inviting Jesus into his home was like, I get to have this well-known evangelist into my house. It might really help my image to invite this well-known itinerant preacher into my home and entertain him. I'll pick his brain. I'll see just how much smarter I am than him. And this is all about status and appearance for Simon. His attitude is anything but beautiful. And yet it's not too difficult to sort of identify with Simon. Like in this story, if I have to identify with anybody, I probably identify with Simon more. He's a hard man. He's a critical man. He second guesses the judgment of this sort of wild card preacher who demonstrates a lack of discernment in accepting this sinful woman. Like, whoa, 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 whoa. You don't know what you're getting into here, Jesus. So in his super spirituality, Simon says, if Jesus were a prophet, he would know what kind of woman this is. Like, you just don't have this sort of woman hanging all over your feet. She's a sinner, and you're supposed to know better. So on the other hand, we have this woman, right? This woman whose name we don't know. There are a lot of traditions surrounding this particular passage. Some speculate that this particular woman is Mary Magdalene. We don't have any proof it's Mary Magdalene, but that was sort of the heritage that was passed down with this. We know she was a sinful woman. Again, more speculation. She could be a prostitute. And based on the language, there's some reason to sort of lean that way. But we don't know. All we really know is that she lived a sort of well-known sinful life. She was not a pious person, and everybody knew about it. So we might assume that she's a worldly woman who is prominent in her own right. Like Simon, she's well known, this woman, except she's well known because she's so bad. Simon's well known because he's so good. She is well known because she is not so good, right? So when she appears, you can understand the horror of Simon the Pharisee. He did not want her on his property. This is not the sort of people who come into my house. But her attitude toward Jesus, at least, is one of humility. It says that she came up behind Jesus. Now, I never thought about that, but that like she came up behind him to wash his feet. I'd always pictured it, and maybe it was a movie I saw on TV or something, but I'd always pictured her like falling at his feet and he's looking down at her. But no, she comes up behind him because she doesn't feel worthy to even be in front of him. So she falls at his feet behind him so he doesn't have to look at her. Imagine that. Contrasted to the lifestyle that she has been living in, she's now falling at the feet of the Son of God in utter debasement, right? Whatever her sinful life may have been, she's not putting on airs. She's not acting like she's better than she is. She is humbling herself as utterly as she can. And she probably, based on her reputation, was probably a openly defiant in her ungodliness, right? Even we might say aggressively sinning, because she just was out there and just doing it, whatever it was. She was just well known for it. Yet here she replaces that aggression with humility. Notice the way she honors Jesus. She wipes his feet with her hair. She kisses his feet. She washes them with her tears. This woman who was used to blatantly doing brazen things now expresses this attitude of honor and humility. Notice also her spiritual extravagance. In gratitude, she pours perfume on Jesus' feet. She's giving whatever she can, humbling herself however she can. So do you see the contrast in her life? That she has gone from, just worldliness to utter humility. In comparison to the contrast in Simon's life, who he's a pious guy before, and now he's a judgmental guy of Jesus here. That's not a big contrast. Simon's always been a good person, at least in his mind. He's always sort of had what he needed or done what he needed to. He's always been considered a well-respected person in the community. Not so with this woman who was so sinful. There was a lot of contrast in her life. She sees the difference between herself and Jesus, and she knows that's a big gap. Simon sees the difference between him and Jesus, and he thinks it's a small gap that Jesus has to step up to him. There's the big difference right there. Simon resents this woman breaking into the middle of this special dinner he's given Jesus. But Jesus stops and says, Simon, I want you to teach you a lesson. You need to learn the lesson that this woman is showing right here. You need to learn the lesson of contrast, to see the difference between me and you. That's what you need to learn. So there are some important lessons here for you and me that I want to observe with you this morning. And the first lesson, this first lesson in contrast, is the importance of understanding, or the importance of revelation. Suppose you have a lot of money, but you spend your money and you don't keep records. Like you don't really know how much you have anymore or how much you spend anymore. You just had the money and you spent some money. You can kind of develop what's known as a false sense of security. Oh, there's always more in the bank. The more will be coming in probably, right? If you have money and you don't keep records, you just tell yourself, I'll always have more. For some people, that's how they like to handle life. Just don't think about it. Don't keep up with it. Just sort of ignore it, and it'll be fine. I mean, it's like not facing facts. That's why we love credit cards, by the way. Credit cards are super popular because you don't have to face reality with credit cards. You can live a pretty good lifestyle even though you don't have pretty good lifestyle money. That makes them super appealing. You don't have to deal with it right now. Now, you'll have to deal with it down the line, but you don't have to deal with it right now. So to live without a true understanding of the state of your life, that's a dangerous place to be. We need to have an understanding about who we really are. That's the revelation we need to have. We need to understand who we really are. The story that Jesus tells about the banker and the people with the debts, both to the same person, right? Two people, both owe money to the same person. One owes 500, one owes 50. Neither was able to pay it. One person has a debt that's larger than the other, and the man forgives both debts. Jesus said, who do you think appreciated it most? And Simon answers rightly, that's easy. I went to math school, and I learned all sorts of equations, and I figured the person who got forgiven 500 is more thankful, more grateful, more appreciative than the person who was just forgiven 50, right? Jesus though, is not the lesson he's really trying to get Simon to grasp. What he's really trying to get Simon to grasp is that both people had a debt they could not pay. Whether it was 500 or 50 or 5 or 5 billion, you can't pay the debt, you can't pay the debt. That's what you need to learn, is that you and I, we have a debt we cannot pay. That the gap between me and you and Jesus is so big that there's no way to cover it. That I cannot go out. If I sell everything I own and I just go to living in tattered old jeans and a t-shirt I find on the side of the road, eating out of trash cans, and every penny I have goes into helping the poor and the homeless and the orphans and the hungry, and if I give every spare second I have, every second I have to preaching the gospel of Jesus, and I live utterly sacrificially for the rest of my life, then all that goodness points I earn is nothing. That it cannot pay the debt I owe to Jesus. Simon is essentially saying, I'm a good person. I live a good life. I'm walking with God. Things are pretty good with my family. We're doing okay. What Simon didn't realize was that he had an unpayable debt. He did not see the unpayable debt. This woman, the sinner, she saw the unpayable debt. She knew there was no way she could be good. Now, I am not, by the way, encouraging you to go out and live the wild life so you'll appreciate Jesus more. That is not the takeaway from this lesson. And make sure that makes it onto the internet. I am not telling you, you just don't appreciate Jesus enough. You need to go and cheat on your spouse and and drink too much and gamble away your life savings. That is not what we're saying here at all. What I am saying is that we have to see that self-righteousness stinks to Jesus every bit as much as any sin we can think of. That self-righteousness, self-promotion, and pride are just as offensive to Jesus as infidelity and murder and lying, cheating, stealing, whatever you think's the worst. The problem that we have is not that we need to go out and do something bad to create contrast. The real tragedy is that we already have the contrast and we just don't know it. Like here I am, I'm a pretty good guy, right? I was born into Christian parents and was raised in a Christian home, baptized at a pretty early age, went to a Christian college, spent most of my life in ministry. And so it can be really tempting for me to think, yeah, I'm a good guy. I'm faithful to my wife. I love both my kids most days. I pay my taxes or whatever you think is good, right? And just think, I'm pretty close to Jesus. But on my own, I am no closer to Jesus than the worst sinner you find in our community. So if you and I are going to be thankful today, we're going to have to recognize that we are in no way deserving of grace or mercy. That we have failed, miserably failed. That we've done shameful, shameful things, and that we have failed to do the glorious things God has called us to. And that God in His mercy took us into Himself even after He knew that. When we see that contrast, then we'll begin to be thankful. Second thing, not only does Jesus talk about the importance of revelation or understanding, He also talks about the importance of perspective. Not just revelation, but also of wisdom. That's really important step in becoming a thankful, grateful person. Gratitude grows out of a right view of things. That's pretty obvious here in this lesson between Simon and this woman. She had the right perspective on herself. She saw the true nature of her life. Simon did not. She recognized the awfulness of the things she had done. Simon saw only the goodness of the things he had done. This woman saw the true nature of sin. Simon did not because of his self-righteousness. He was blinded to the difference between himself and Jesus. He saw himself as an equal or even superior to Jesus because he judged Jesus and says, yeah, this guy can't be a prophet. I wouldn't let that woman touch me. Surely if this guy was any good, he wouldn't let her touch him either. And that kept Simon really from having thankfulness or gratitude in his heart. We have to recognize that sin is sin is sin. That self-righteousness in sin is just as terrible as wicked sin, right? And that we are all bankrupt, that we all have a debt we cannot pay. So let's just kind of put this into a real-world scenario. What's worse? You see these two stories on the news. Which story is worse? That a tornado wipes out a town, or that a town's water supply has been contaminated and that it is slowly killing all of its citizens? Which one is worse? Well, I'll tell you which one is grander and more exciting. I'll tell you which one makes the national news. We are more awestruck, more terror-stricken by the tornado, right? But is it really any worse? Not really. So what's worse? Like going out and committing these terrible, terrible sinful acts, or the sort of slow cancer of self-righteousness? Which is worse? And I have to tell you that in some ways, self-righteousness is more dangerous because it
it blinds you. That you can kind of delude yourself into thinking that you really are good. That when you think you have all the answers, you stop looking for answers. Right? Our problem is that when we become self-righteous, we fail to see the contrast between ourselves and our lives and what God has called us to, what he wants to do in our lives. This woman who was caught up in the fruit of her sin, and when she saw real righteousness, she's like, oh, that is way different than me. Thankfulness comes in our lives when we not only get a right view of ourselves and sin, we also get a right view of the nature of God's love. This woman, she saw the fruit of Christ's love. She'd spent a lot of sleepless nights. She'd spent a lot of lonely days. She knew the emptiness and the void and the frustration and the bitterness of sin. Simon didn't know those things. Simon didn't lie awake at night wondering where this life path was going to take him. He didn't cry himself to sleep because he knew he was lost. She knew what it was to be forgiven when Jesus said, I forgive you. For the first time in her life, that craving inside of her had been satisfied, the first time. Can you understand the contrast in her life that would make her thankful? For the first time, she had faith. She was able to believe in somebody. And when you and I get a true view of Christ's love, of his acceptance of us, of his mercy towards us, of what he has done for us, when we understand what he has brought us out of and what he has brought us into, and how can we then rise to anything but thankfulness? Now, the title of this sermon was Thankful in a Thankless World. And I don't want you to think that nobody out there is thankful or anything like that. That's really not what I was trying to say, but rather that oftentimes we think of thankfulness like the thankfulness Simon had. Simon's thankfulness went something like this. I am so thankful I'm not bad like this woman. And you may see somebody walking down the side of the road and you're like, I am so poor. I am dry. I'm so thankful I am driving a vehicle and not walking. See somebody whose house has fallen down. I am so thankful I have a good house and not a house like that. I'm so thankful that I have a wife like this and not a wife like that, a husband like this, not a husband like that. So thankful my kids are in a school like this, not a school like that. So thankful I wear clothes like this, not clothes like that. So thankful that I go to a church like this, not a church like that. And our thankfulness becomes entirely dependent on how bad off somebody else is. And Jesus says that's hogwash. That is not the thankfulness he's called us to. The thankfulness he has called us to is to be thankful. Thankful that he has invited us to a Savior like this and not a lostness like we have on our own. That's real thankfulness. Be thankful that he has loved us like we are and not expected us to do something we can't. Thankful that we are just loved enough to be welcomed into him. That's a thankfulness that does not depend on anyone else or their situation. It depends only on our recognition of how broken we are. This morning, as we head into the season of Thanksgiving, let us be mindful of just how great God's love towards us has been and how blessed we are to be invited into his family. Let's stand and let's sing.